Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
AIM-listed Chapeldown, the UK's largest winemaker by acreage and production volume, has revealed a record year, reaching sales of more than a million bottles of English sparkling wine for the first time ever, as it returns to pre-tax profitability on a 22% rise in revenues. The company has also upgraded its growth expectations on the back of what it says were recent record harvests. Who better to speak to than the chief executive, James Pennefeather? James, welcome. First of all, congratulations on the numbers. I mean, they've made some headline-grabbing detail I've seen over the last week since the release of the figures. As a broad opener to this dig down into the numbers, explain more about your general strategy from the board and how it's working to improve shareholder returns.
Thanks very much, Jeremy. Yes, we were delighted with the results that we announced last week. In terms of our overall strategy, I suppose that our first vines were planted at Templeton back in 1977. So that's actually 49 years ago. And I suppose over those 49 years, we've really established ourselves as the number one English winemaker and the number one in a region that is now increasingly recognised as a very credible New World wine region. And I suppose as part of that, it was great for the first time to sell last year 1 million bottles of traditional method sparkling for the first time ever. So that's, I suppose, phase one of Chapeldown. The next phase is really to establish ourselves as one of the world's great sparkling wine brands. And we've set ourselves an ambition to win an equivalent 1% share of the global champagne market by 2035. And so really that next phase of growth is to build on the foundation that have been laid over the past 49 years to a very exciting future, which is all about a strong brand, a strong route to market, and also to do that with disciplined capital management as well.
Let's dig down now and get a feel for some of the numbers that are perhaps maybe less obvious when reading the release that you've recently undertaken. At net sales up 19%, but interestingly, as a backdrop to this, gross margins fell from 48.4 down to 47.1%. You appear to be a little more upbeat this year on gross margins. Explain more about how this strategy is working out.
That net sales growth, 19% top line, wine sales actually up 22%, and then our core strategic focus, which is traditional method sparkling, up 28%. And that growth is ahead of the category and really reinforces our position as the number one in English wine. In terms of the gross margin decline that you saw for the financial year 2025, that's actually for two reasons. First of all, the off-trade channel grew really strongly at 38%. And that's a slightly lower margin channel relative to some of our other channels. And that's caused some of the gross margin decline. But in addition, last year we were selling a lot of traditional method sparkling, which had been made in the 2022 harvest. And the cost of that was higher than the bottling cost at the time because of the recent start of the Ukraine war. And you'll remember that inflation period. And so that's what impacted gross margins last year. But that will unwind during 2026. And we're already seeing an improved gross margin in our first quarter. And as you said, have held to the guidance that we'd originally given the city.
Yeah. Net debt, let's look at that. That increased 36% to almost £12.5 million, despite this improved profitability. What's driving the higher leverage?
So this is the phase that we're at the moment in our cycle. Last year, we sold 1 million bottles of traditional method sparkling. To get to our 1% equivalent of global champagne, that's basically 2.5, 2.6 million bottles that we'll need to sell. So over the last 5-6 years, we have invested in planting new vineyards. So last year, 2025, we had 1,000 acres planted, but only 777 of them in full production, because it takes a few years before you can harvest grapes from them. The 2026-2027 harvest, by the end of 27, we should be in at that full 1,000 acres. And so some of the net debt is driven by the investment in planting new vineyards. The rest of it is driven by when you make traditional methods sparkling wine, that second fermentation, which is what gives the bubbles, happens in the bottle. And then you mature it for, you know, anything up to 7-8 years before you sell it. And that is effectively investing in working capital for future sales. So the net debt is mainly driving now working capital of laying down maturing bottles of traditional methods sparkling to sell in the future. The good news is that we've got significant liquidity headroom. We have a £20 million revolving credit facility with PNC Bank and the flexibility to extend that to £30 million through an accordion. And so, you know, we are comfortable with the level of leverage that we have at the moment, because obviously it is in service of driving that growth in the future.
So what's the maximum leverage levels are you comfortable with? I see that I think net debt's forecast to keep rising through to fiscal 2029. So investors have to get used to this idea that to grow a business, you have to have a certain degree of debt. But what's the maximum leverage you're comfortable with at these sort of with this trajectory?
Yeah, so we've set ourselves a target of maximum 4x our EBITDA, net debt to EBITDA. And, you know, within going back to that sort of 30 million that facility that we have with PNC Bank, we expect to maintain a buffer and not take up to that full 30 million.
Okay, let's stick with this point about EBITDA, because operating cash flow, you've got a negative figure there of £3.8 million, I believe, clearly lags the progress made on the earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortization. What initiatives are underway to strengthen the cash conversion? And when should shareholders expect sustainable positive free cash flow, which they quite often look for in releases by companies?
Yeah, so our CFO, Loan, actually during the results explain this a little bit more. Our underlying cash flow is actually currently positive. The reason why at an operating level it comes across as negative is because of those investments that we're making in maturing stocks, which are classed as operating working capital. But those are essential to underpin our future growth. So once a vineyard is in full production, it's a minimum of 3 years before you can then sell the traditional method sparkling that comes from that vineyard. So there is a working capital rise over those 3 years. And as you said, you know, that takes us up to 2029. But then that relatively quickly unwinds after that. And I think that's the point where shareholders can expect to start seeing free cash flow coming through. I mean, one of the things that the board is very keen on is that for this next phase of growth, that we really leverage our existing assets. So, you know, we now have the vineyards planted that we need for sustained double-digit growth into the 2030s. We have the winery we need. We've already made the investments in our financial ERP systems for this next phase of growth. And so what will be driving the rise in net debt will be the operating working capital of laying down this maturing traditional method sparkling wine.
Let's take a look at the production side of things. Productive vineyard area is up 5% on what I noticed was unchanged acreage. So clearly you're producing more, you're benefiting more from what you've already got in the ground. How much organic capacity headroom does that give you before the next material planting cycle is required in order to continue to feed through in your growth expectations?
Yeah, so in the medium term, we have the vineyards that we need. Yeah, in order to get to that 1% equivalent share of 2035, we don't need new planting for that. Obviously, we when it comes to 2029, 2030, we'll look at the options then for the next phase of growth and how we do that in terms of getting additional grapes for that, if indeed that is what we decide to do, rather than obviously pursue a more premiumization path, which would also be open to us then.
And in terms of the pipeline of your production, how about inventory? I mean, it's built to £30.6 million. Help us understand the strategic rationale that you've got behind this. You've obviously got to support future growth. You've explained already but producing wine is a very, very long tail process.
Well, so we have still wines that are, I mean, historically, you know, I talked earlier about back in 1977, the first vines that were planted were Germanic still wine varieties, because at the time that was what the expectation was going to be for English wine. But then we realised that the champagne trio of Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier could also ripen really well and create sparkling wines, you know, that have the same quality credentials as the very best in the world. And so for traditional method sparkling, you're right, there is a working capital cycle that happens. And the inventory that we have, which is now valued at cost at £30 million, obviously the actual value that we will get for that will be significantly more, that we work on a stock norm there of 3 to 4 years of inventory of sales. So most of that three to four years is wines that are maturing and that are not ready for sale. And then we hold a little bit of headroom on top of that. And then some of the wines, of course, we age for much longer than those 3 years. So basically the 2025 harvest last year, which was, I think, probably the best ever for Chapel Down, our yields were up 15% higher than normal, but also we had amazing sunshine, which have added extra layers of complexity and flavour to the grapes. That the wines, traditional method wines from those 2025 harvest, won't be sold until either the very end of 2028 or maybe 2029. And I suppose that's the magic of traditional method, because you have these wonderful chore flavours of brioche and croissant that really add richness to the wine. But at the same time, you know, it does take a few years before you get to realise the cash.
And of course, it's important to understand where this wine goes. And you've already said that you have different sorts of wine, the TMS, the traditional method, sparkling, against that, which is still wine. But of course, when looking at the spread of where this goes, I noticed that off-trade has grown 38% and I believe is now the largest channel. How much of fiscal 25 off-trade growth was consumer demand against retailer restocking? Because obviously these companies that do stock your wine have to have an inventory themselves to work down into.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeremy. If you look back at 2024, there was retailer destocking across the industry, and that then recovered in 2025, and in terms of lapping that destocking from the year before. So of the 19% growth at a total level that we reported last year, a third of that was related to the retailer stocking. But actually, if you look at the underlying category sales of English sparkling in the off-trade channel, they were up 12%, and obviously Chapel Down grew faster than that. In fact, we strengthened our market share to 36%. But the off-trade channel is a really important channel for us. I suppose if you look at 300 years of champagne, they've really established themselves as being the sparkling wine that you drink on very formal celebration occasions. And Chapel Down is appropriate for those occasions, but we've increased the number of occasions, celebration occasions, on which consumers are drinking high-value sparkling wine into more informal celebration occasions, such as wedding anniversaries, birthdays, graduations, promotions, etc. And so that the retailers have really got on board with what is happening. We have retailer basket data that demonstrates that. And so we're getting a lot more visibility now. And in fact, this year we are currently doing a lovely sort of visibility activation with a number of retailers celebrating homegrown flavours, a real sort of summer positioning, because what we found is that English sparkling wine really over indexes compared with other sparkling wines in the summer months. And because we are being consumed on those more sort of informal celebration occasions. And so that's a really strong proposition for our retailer customers to work with us and support us on.
And of course, during the process of working the supermarket opportunity, I know you're having to shoulder slightly lower margins. How do you balance the rapid supermarket-led growth with preserving what I know to be central core strategy at Chapeldown is to try and make sure that you retain this premium brand positioning and to a degree pricing power as well. It's difficult, I know, to juggle this. How do you go about that?
I think that's really led by our marketing, and we have increased our marketing, our sort of reinvestment rate, and announced that this year as well by a couple of sort of percentage points. But when you ask people why they choose a certain brand of high value sparkly wine, the number one reason is brand awareness. And the marketing investment that we've made over the years has built our brand awareness to a point where we are the number one in the English wine category. So in fact, back in 2022, the brand awareness of Chapeldown amongst sparkling wine drinkers was 32%. Last year, that is up to 49%. But the exciting sort of potential and opportunity for us is that the leading champagne brand, Moët, is at 89%. So there's significant headroom for us to get after. One of the things that we have done successfully is built the brand as one of the sort of a modern British luxury icon. We have associations with England Cricket, Royal Ascot, the Boat Race, and more recently, the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. And that has really sort of strengthened the premium nature of the brand. The other area that I'm particularly excited about is that we're going to be investing more behind our single vineyard Kits Coty range. And that's a 100-acre plot that we bought back in 2008 in Kent's North Downs. And that's a lovely strip of south-facing chalk soil on the same stream of chalk that comes up from the Champagne region under the English Channel and into Kent. And I think by investing more in marketing behind that sort of the Kits Coty sub-brand, we're going to build a more premium halo across the Chapeldown brand as a whole. And we're seeing really great growth in the on-trade as well. And the on-trade and pubs, hotels and bars are a place where sort of brands are tried for the first time, and where you can really build a sort of a premium halo. And our distribution levels are up 12% last year in that on-trade channel as well. And you know, we started really strongly this year in that channel too.
Well, let's pick up on that business about marketing spend from 11%. I think you were talking a couple of percentage points or so, I think between 13.5% and 14.5% of revenue growth in this year. What return on investment thresholds are you using, and when should shareholders expect that higher spend to translate into incremental profit increases?
So the board made this decision because we know that our marketing investment has been working, and that's shown by the increase in brand awareness and also penetration levels. But one of the great things about Chapeldown is we have an absolute gold mine of consumer assets. So every year, over 50,000 consumers come and visit our winery down in Tenterton. Half of those pay for tours and have a two-hour experience of a tour and a tasting. We have 10,000 retail shareholders. You know, they're some of our biggest brand advocates. And we've also got a customer relationship marketing database of over 100,000 consumers. And so, you know, because most of our marketing nowadays is digital, we know exactly what return on advertising spend we're getting, and what we are getting is very positive levels, and that's given us the confidence to slightly increase our investment on marketing this year.
Just want to dig down as well into this TMS part of the business. Traditional methods sparkling now represents something like around about 74% of wine sales. What's the realistic ceiling for mix improvement here? How much more incremental margin upside remains for this premiumization?
We've set ourselves a target of 80% of our wine sales by 2030 to be traditional method sparkling. There are some also structural reasons for that as well, because all our recent plantings have been of the traditional method sparkling grapes, whereas obviously historically we've still got about 11% of our vineyards still planted up with Bacchus, for example, which is mainly still, though we do sell a little bit of that carbonated. We do really value the role that still wines play in our portfolio. Not only do they showcase the winemaker's talent, but they're also a good source of increasing our sort of brand footprint and visibility on retailer shelves. And they're good for cash flow as well, because most of those you sell within a year of the previous harvest.
Let's look at overseas sales. How critical is the launch of the new distribution partnership with Jackson Family Wines in the US?
We're really delighted with our international sales performance last year. It was up 49%, and that was very much led by the USA. The US is the number one global export market for champagne. 27 million bottles of champagne are sold in the US every year. And we have a great importer in Jackson Family Wines, who are one of the leading independent winemakers in the US. And we've grown in the last year from being available in 10 states to 23 states. And the feedback that we're getting from our Jackson Family Wines partners is that two things are really resonating and getting our brand traction. The first is that US consumers are increasingly interested in wines from New World wine regions, and England is getting sort of understood as one of those, and thankfully, you know, some positive associations when people think of England. But secondly, the taste of our wines as well, which is that fresh, crisp taste, a lot of sort of energy and vitality in those wines. Those are very on trend, and actually in the UK as well, we're seeing that millennials are really moving towards that style of lighter, fresher, crisper wines, which is very on trend at the moment.
And is this repeatable with other distribution partnerships, do you think, across the states?
Yes, I think the states will be exclusive for Jackson Family, but there are, if you look at the top 10 global champagne export markets, Chapeldown is currently only distributed in 5 of them. So what we learn in the US, we will take, you know, that playbook and roll it out into those other markets. And, you know, very excited about the opportunity there and what Chapeldown can do.
And what's the pickup? Of course, the big question is in the Champagne region in France, is there much for English wines in France?
I don't think that's going to be one of our priority markets in the short term. I think we'd rather they come to us first rather than us going to them. But the Champagne region has done a fantastic job over 300 years, and we've certainly sort of benefited from the association that has been created with celebration for sparkling wine.
Now, on the share price, on the basis of the share price hasn't yet reflected the operational progress that you've made and some of the headlines we've been talking about today, obviously excellent for the company's outlook. What would you most like long-term shareholders to take away about the strategy and the value that you're trying to deliver here?
I think the important thing to note is that this category is growing, and it's growing double digit, and that we are the leading brand in that, that we have now quality credentials that mean that we stand shoulder to shoulder with the finest sparkling wine brands in the world. And last year, you know, we won 30 awards for quality, and we've put in the investments already that we need for this next phase of growth. And so the board and my management team, we have a really clear strategy on where we're going to focus. It's on brand value enhancement, sustainable channel expansion, and thirdly, doing that with disciplined capital management. And yeah, our focus is on very much now building the brand and expanding our route to market so that we can achieve that ambition of one equivalent 1% of the global champagne market by 2035.
And how much of your time is taken up in considering risks from the current global frailties that there are around at the moment?
I think the consumer environment over the last decade has been very volatile. One thing that we are seeing at Chapeldown is that whatever is going on in the wide world, consumers are still finding reasons to come together and celebrate. And we are playing an important role within that. And we're seeing a, you know, lovely trend towards fresher, crisper style of wines, which is really playing in English wine and Chapeldown's favour.
other thing I wanted to talk about, and I have spoken to previous chief executives about this, I know this is a long-term plan, and that is shareholder reward through perks. What is the current situation about perks available to shareholders of Chapel Down Group?
So we highly value the 10,000 retail shareholders that we have. And as we're listed on AIM, and we took that listing in 2023, we're very committed to remaining on AIM. Our number one shareholder, who is Michael Spencer, in fact, has stepped up to become chairman of the board in order to reaffirm our long-term commitment to AIM and to this strategy. But one of the other things that our retail shareholders benefit from, and in fact, I think it's about 80% of our shareholders are either gold or platinum shareholders. And to become a gold shareholder, just need to buy 2,000 shares and you get two free tours of our winery down in Tenterton a year. And more importantly, perhaps 33% of our wines as well. And that means that our shareholders are also an important part of our revenue as well.
Lovely. Okay. Well, look, we look forward to hearing more about the successes that you're scoring at the moment in terms of your numbers. But James Pennefeather, thank you so much indeed for joining us, the Chief Executive of Chapel Down.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember all investment involves risk.